Forgot to mention a few minutes ago, we like to meet during the week for lunch during the school year, and this week is our last week to do lunch. It's going to be John's last lunch with us. He usually hangs out with us, so we're going to the most Columbus place we can for lunch, Schmitz. So if you need an excuse to go down and have some sausage on Friday, we're going to go on Friday. In the bulletin, I think it says Thursday, but we had to move it to Friday. Friday at 11:30, so if you want to join us at the Sausage House, 11:30, text me so I can make sure, because I won't see this until we're all there. Sorry, I shouldn't have mentioned sausage. Now we're all hungry. Yes, happy Mother's Day. Good job, Brian. It's okay, I made announcements, and we didn't announce that it was Mother's Day for all the dads that forgot. Kathy, thank you for sharing your thoughts this morning. It made me think of this poster that we have and kind of really our core values, and I feel like so much of what you shared represented all four of our real core values, that we want to be a family that's real and that's deep and that's a part of something bigger than ourselves, and everything you said really embodied that. Anytime you go to a concert, there's always a warm-up act. Sorry, I'm just not feeling the energy yet. We're going to get there. So you see where I'm going with this, right? So anytime you go to a concert, like if the concert starts at 7 o'clock, whoever you're going to see is not going to show up until 8:30, 9 o'clock, which I think when you're first going to concerts, you don't realize this. So you're like the first one there, and you're sitting there, and the stadium's like a third full, you know, kind of like us when church is supposed to start, nobody's here, and you're just kind of waiting there, and then some dude you never heard of gets up and plays a little thing, and everybody's like, ah, that's great, now bring out somebody else. And then, you know, because the idea is you can't just get out of your car, walk to the stadium, and then just be ready to rock and roll with Bon Jovi or whoever you're going to see. Sorry, I figured we probably should get that out of our way. It is Mother's Day. That was your present. There you go. Bon Jovi reference. But the idea is it just takes a little while to kind of get everybody warmed up. And it's especially the case at a stand-up comedy routine. If you've ever been to a stand-up show, like at the Funny Bone or something, there's always some obnoxious guy that gets up and does a couple little stand-up things and kind of gets everybody kind of ready to laugh. You know, it's almost like you got to have permission to laugh. Like, okay, you can laugh and loosen up a little bit, because we don't just come that way naturally. A couple years ago, Mary Beth and I were in Los Angeles, and we went to, it was when Jay Leno was still host of the Tonight Show. They do a Tonight Show, right? Somebody comes out early on and kind of warms the crowd up a little bit. And I got to thinking, like, we kind of need that at church sometimes, because it's not like, obviously we need it today. It's not like you drive your car and we're all driving all the way across town and you deal with the stupid construction on Old State Road, which is just a nightmare, and all the roads are closed and everything else. And you get here and your kids are fighting in the back seat, and you accept on Mother's Day. I'm sure everybody's kids were fine today. And all this stuff is going on. You walk through the church building. It's like, let's worship the Lord, you know? And everybody's just kind of like tired, and I don't know what's going on in your life, you know? Some of you had a really great week and you're ready to roll, and some of you, it was a terrible week. Some of you, it's been a terrible month, or maybe even a terrible year, and you're just not in the mood. And depending on, you know, whether Brian forgets to say Happy Mother's Day, or, you know, I do something stupid every week, whatever it is, it just sends us down the path to just, I'm just not sure that I'm feeling it today, or just not whatever. And we need like a warm-up act. Like, we need, so Jennifer, did you work on this at Kent State? Like, some kind of warm-up act that you could kind of bring to us every week or something? Two acting classes, perfect. So we'll talk. So I'm like, we just gotta get our hearts ready. And so we're gonna attempt a warm-up act this morning. You ready for this? I've not had any acting classes, so we'll see how this goes. Ty, are you ready? Can you? I was thinking about this. One of my favorite moments. You guys know that I'm a big Saturday Night Live fan. One of my favorite episodes ever. It was the first live show that they did after September 11th. You know, of course, that happened right in New York, and there was also, and if you remember the monologue that day, it wasn't Rudy Giuliani asked Lorne Michaels, is it okay to laugh? You know, can we laugh? And that was a great question, and it was funny, and everybody laughed, but it was serious too, because it was what everybody was thinking in those moments. And I think people go to church that way sometimes. Can we laugh at church? Like, is it okay to laugh? And we laugh a lot here, but I've been to some churches, like most churches that I go to. It's like it's not okay to laugh. A couple years ago, I'm going to protect the names, to protect the innocent. I was teaching a Bible class on a Wednesday night here in town, and I had some good material, man. I was bringing my A game laugh, and like nobody laughed. And I could just tell that there was one little lady in the back, like where Mindy's sitting, and she just kind of chuckled a couple times, and I could tell she wanted so badly to just laugh. I give you permission to laugh. We'll attempt. I want to tell you a story about Walter and Ethel. This is not a real story. I was hoping Ethel would be here today so she would resonate with the story. Walter and Ethel. Walter and Ethel would go to the state fair every single year. And Walter's dream was to ride the helicopter. Right? Have you been to the Ohio State Fair? You know they have the helicopter ride. And we'd always tell Ethel, Ethel, let's ride the helicopter. And she'd say, it costs $50. And $50 is $50. So they wouldn't do it. And year after year, they would go to the state fair, and he always wanted to ride the helicopter, and she would say the same thing until he was 87 years old. And he looks over to his lovely wife, and he says, Ethel, I'm 87 years old. If we don't ride the helicopter this year, I'm probably never going to get to ride the helicopter. She said, Walter, $50 is $50. Well, it just so happens that the pilot overheard their conversation, and he comes over to Walter and Ethel, and he says, I'll tell you guys what, if you can ride the helicopter and not say a single word the entire ride, I will let you ride for free. But if either of you say anything, then it'll be $50. So they talk to each other, and they're pretty well tested by this point. And they said, you know what? We'll do it. So they get on the helicopter, and the pilot has got a mission. And he's flying all over and doing the loop-de-loos and all kinds of stuff, trying to get them to scream out. And it was just silent as can be. They wouldn't say anything. So he does like one more final thing, and he finally gives up. And he comes down, and he lands, and he says, Walter, I cannot believe that you guys did not say one peep. And Walter said, I know, when Ethel fell out, I almost said something, but $50 is $50. Man, that's funny. I don't care who you are. There's a story about a guy who was speeding down the road, and he runs past a cop. Cop pulls out, pulls him over, and he says, sir, you were speeding. Do you know how fast you were going? He says, yeah, I'm getting away from a robbery. The man says, you were robbed? He said, no, I was the one doing the robbery. He said, you were speeding and you did a robbery? He said, yeah, and the loot is in the back of my car. What? The loot is in the back of the car? Yes, and he starts to reach into the car. He says, sir, I've got a loaded gun in my glove compartment. So he says, sir, I'm going to have to call in backup. So he radios in backup, and helicopters show up, and all these other police cars are around, and it's this big deal, and they take the man into custody, and they're getting ready to put him in the cruiser. And another officer comes and says, sir, the person that pulled you over said that you had robbed a bank and that the loot was in your car and that there was a weapon in your vehicle. We can't find any of those things. And he looked at him and he says, yeah, the liar probably said I was speeding too. You like that one as much? I like that one. Story about the captain, the Navy captain of a ship. There's a pirate ship coming, and he looked over to his first mate, and he said, I need you to go get me my red shirt. He said, what do you need a red shirt for? He says, that way if I get shot and I'm bleeding, no one will notice the blood, and you guys won't be scared. So once he gives him his red shirt, and they fight off the pirate ship, no harm, no foul. The next morning, somebody wakes up the captain, and he says, Captain, there's 50 pirate ships surrounding us. And he yells out to his first mate, bring me my brown pants. Man, that is really funny. Lucky I'm not at that church I was at that one Wednesday night. This is fun, man. All right, so let's talk about preachers. So there was a preacher seminar. You know, a couple weeks ago I was at Pepperdine for the lecture out there. So something kind of similar. There was a seminar for young ministers. And as is the case in a lot of those kind of places, a seasoned minister like myself gets up and it starts to kind of admonish the younger ministers. And he begins by telling a joke. He gets up and he says, I spent the better part of all of my years being loved by a woman in the arms of a woman who was not my wife. And everybody just gasps, what? Maybe it was Mother's Day. He said, it was my mother. And this guy's out there thinking, that's a good joke. He hears how it goes over. He says, I'm going to use that. So the next time when he gets up to his first sermon in his new congregation, he gets up and he says, I spent my whole a better part of my life in the arms of a woman who's not my wife. And everybody gasps. And the poor guy sits up there and he can't remember the punchline of the joke. And so he's just standing there and after 10 seconds he says, "And I don't remember her name." That's good. That's good. Another story about an old country church, and this old elderly woman walks up to the back of the church and a friendly elder meets her and he says, "Welcome, welcome, you know, we're glad you're here. Where would you like to sit this morning?" And she says, "I want to sit in the very front row." And the elder kind of pulls her to the side and says, "Ma'am, our pastor is really boring. You don't want to sit in the front row." And she looks at him and she said, "Do you know who I am?" And he says, "No, ma'am." He says, "I'm the pastor's mother." And the elder looked at her and says, "Well, do you know who I am?" And she says, "No." And he says, "Good." And then maybe a final joke to send you on your way home today. Kids were really, really quiet in the back of the car on the way home from church. Like, they're usually fighting and carrying on, and they're just so quiet. And the dad leans back three different times and asks the kids, "What is wrong with you guys?" And finally, after the third time, the kid spoke up and said, "Well, the preacher said he really wanted us to be brought up in a Christian home, but we want to stay with you guys." That's kind of low. You know, there's a lot of ways to measure how healthy a church is. You can talk about membership. You can talk about prayer meetings. You can talk about finances. You can talk about all kinds of different stuff. But it's interesting that nobody ever talks about what I think might be the greatest measure of a church. How often do you laugh together at church? I mean, when you think about church, outside of church, when you see it portrayed in media or people talk about church, how many people think, "Now that's an exciting place. That's a fun place to go." Instead, it's like, "Let's go to the morgue." Like, that's as exciting as it gets. But it's so contrary to what the Bible teaches about life. Paul actually tells people they should laugh together more often. Philippians chapter 4, verse 4 says, "Rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again. Rejoice. Let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. Don't be anxious about anything." Like, this just sounds like a message we need to hear. Don't be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds in Christ. Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about those things. Whatever you've learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put it into practice, and the God of peace will be with you. It was funny when Ann came up and was reading through that passage from Galatians, Mary Beth leaned over halfway through and said, "That's not very joyful." Well, it's great. It's this picture in Paul of the works of the flesh and the fruits of the Spirit. And when you think about it, we so often talk about all that bad stuff, immorality and all greed and all the stuff that's listed there. But Paul says, but the fruit of the Spirit is love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and faithfulness and goodness and gentleness and all those things. Those things are supposed to be what we think about and reflect about. And when you talk about those kinds of things, it's difficult not to be joyful. God needs more joyful Christians. When you serve a God who's omnipotent, all-powerful, and omniscient, all-knowing, who's in control of the world, and who we spend our lives trying to determine, is he good or is he not good? Christians say, "Yeah, he's good." If he's good and he's all-powerful and he's all-knowing, then what are we so worried about? What are we so worried about? The psalmist says, "You have turned my mourning into dancing." The church should be a constant place of rejoicing and celebration. And we stand in stark contrast to a world that's obsessed with cynicism and skepticism and doubt and negativity. I mean, the church should be a breath of fresh air in these kind of places, in this kind of world. No matter who the president is, no matter how the economy's doing, no matter how your life happens to be, no matter what sports teams are winning, Paul says, rejoice in the Lord always. And again, I say rejoice. We just have a tendency to take ourselves too seriously. You know, especially those of you who are teenagers, lighten the Clark and lighten up. Come on. Ben and Marina, you guys especially, you're the older teenagers. They're upstairs Snapchatting. Oh, that reminds me. Hey, I wanted to pause for a second. I've never done this before. I got to keep my streaks up. And I thought, what if I Snapchatted the church this morning? So, give me a second. I didn't get a media release or anything for this, so, but it's just gone to my private friends, so just give me a second. Oh, Ben, I'll send it to you too. Okay, sorry, I had to get that done. Or we just take ourselves too seriously. Come on. What are some of your favorite things? Just anything. What's your... Ben Maynard, what is your favorite thing right now? Going to the gym. We're going to do a gun show up here one of these days with you. Ben's been working on them hard. Going to the gym. Deb, what's one of your favorite things? Playing online games. Bill Dameron, this will be interesting. What's your favorite things? What? Birds? See, I hate birds. I had robins chasing me. I have like 25 robins nests in my yard, and they were attacking me yesterday. But I'm glad you like them. Chris, Lewis, what's NASCAR. Super. Natalie? Sleeping. Luke. Luke has so many things in his head right now. Music. Kind of failed under pressure there. Music. Marina, what's your favorite thing upstairs? I don't know. Thanks for nothing. I try to bring you in from upstairs, and all you can get is Ben. Music. There's so many things to be excited about in this world, in our life, right? Like, why are we so worried that Donald Trump's going to end the world, or you know, whatever else is that we're upset about this day or that day? We're going to be okay. We're going to be okay. We're going to be better than okay. This is great. Rejoice in the Lord always. And if Christians could just walk around joyfully all the time, people would be like, what's your problem? Hey man, Jesus is Lord. I'm going to be okay. I know everything looks pretty terrible, but I'm going to be okay. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't times to mourn, right? It's not like life is just one giant party. Probably more of life is a giant party than we realize or that we want to let on to, but it's not always that way. There are times that we're upset. There are times that are difficult. You could look me right in the face and say, well, yeah, well, what about this and this and this? Is that a time to be excited and be joyful? Well, you know that over half of the Psalms, there's 150 Psalms, over half of them are dedicated to lament, to just being upset. You know, that's what's beautiful about the Psalter is that it's about real life, that there are times to be upset. But the word joy is there over 50 times through the Psalms. Or the prophet Isaiah, this big, long book about the destruction of Israel and about people getting their sins repaid and they're breaking the covenant. And yet the word joy still appears in the prophets over 30 times. When the angels came to Mary and Joseph, well, it was the shepherds out in the field, and they proclaimed that Jesus was coming. What does it say they brought? Tidings of great joy. Like he's telling the shepherds, there's great things happening right now. Be excited. In the book of Acts, when the first Christians were converted and they became Christians, over and over again, Luke says they were filled with joy. Like that was their response. Like I'm afraid that sometimes our response would be, we get to go to church every Sunday. Yeah. We'd be disappointed. Oh, we have to go through. No, this is about a life-changing, life-giving opportunity. And so, it seems to me on Mother's Day, it would be a great time to talk about being joyful. Because Mother's Day is this great day, but it's, if we really get honest with ourselves, it's full of mixed emotions. For a lot of people, this is their first Mother's Day without their mom. For some people, every Mother's Day is a reminder that they were never a mom, even though they really wanted to be. For some people, it's a reminder of a terrible experience in their family growing up. And so let's not just pretend like Mother's Day is this great time to rejoice for everybody. But you say, well, that's just being a party pooper. And that's the point, isn't it, of being joyful. Of course, it's not about ignoring all the things that happen that are negative and that are terrible. Of course, those things happen. Of course, we're mourning with those who mourn, the Bible says. But it seems to me that we've just kind of confused joy with happiness. Happiness is America, right? That's what we're about, not joy. It's interesting, the word happy and happiness is only in the Bible about 25 times. But the word joy is in the Bible 250 times. Because joy is about something that's a little more fundamental, deep down inside. They say money can't buy happiness, but I'm not convinced. I think money can buy happiness. It can't buy joy. A lot of things can buy happiness. A lot of things will get you happy. I just started listing things that I was thinking about. You know, if I traveled more, I think I'd be happy. If I had a better education, I'd be happy. If I had a better job, if I had sex more often, if I looked better. And all those things, they're probably true. Let's be honest, right? It's probably true. But Christianity is about something deeper than just flippant happiness that kind of evolves or changes depending on your mood or circumstances. Joy is this deep gut feeling of, no matter what happens to me, I know I'm going to be okay. No matter what circumstances are going on in the world, I know that we're going to be okay. Happiness kind of ebbs and flows with our moods, and it can be easily robbed of us. Now, I'm not saying joy can't be robbed of us, but it takes a lot. It takes a lot to get there, and it takes a lot to be taken apart. I think for Christians in today's world, if there's one thing that will set us apart from everybody else, is if we can find the joy that comes from knowing God. I mean, find the real joy that comes. Imagine that joy manifesting itself among your circles of friends and your spheres of influence. When everybody else is distraught and everybody else is worried and everybody's devastated, you're the pillar and you're the rock because you have this perspective of the world that's bigger than theirs. You know that we're going to be okay. You have complete faith in God that He's going to take care of us. And so while it may look terrible and miserable at the moment, we live in the reality of the future. In John chapter 16, Jesus spends a good bit of time with his disciples before he's to be crucified. And this is the message that he's leaving with them. That they're going to go through the crucifixion with Jesus. They're going to see, and Jesus knows they're going to feel devastated because of death. And he's trying to convey to them that their grief will be turned into great joy because resurrection always defeats the cross. That resurrection is so much more powerful than death. And as Christians, we're called to live into that life. Romans 12:12 says this. And I just found this to be, I've just been really thinking and reflecting about it all week. This is a little Bible verse we can kind of learn together, share together. Be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer. I mean, isn't that just a wonderful just adage to kind of infuse our faith? Be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, and faithful in prayer. Last week we talked about prayer. It just so happens these words have been kind of the most recent we've talked about. Last week we talked about prayer and about how it sustains us through affliction. To be joyful is not to ignore the fact that difficult things are going to happen in our lives. They are. Our faith isn't a promise that God is going to take all of our difficulties away. Instead, it's just a pill to help get through that those times. Kind of a bigger perspective. The week before, our word was perseverance. Patience in affliction. Be patient through prayer, sustaining our joy. This morning, I want to just leave you with that charge. To find a way to be joyful. You know, work camp is a couple weeks away, and that's always a joyful week. Any of you grew up going to church camp or those kinds of things, it's kind of this escape from life, and it usually leaves you with just feeling of exaltation or whatever you want to say. And the reason why it resonates with us so much is because that's what joy is. It's this little dose of, hey, this is what life is supposed to be like. And so let's live that way. Live that way today. Just like Mother's Day is a day, we don't just ignore all the difficulties, but the overarching theme is, let's be thankful. Well, that's really the overarching theme of our faith. There are difficult times that we go through, but the overarching feeling is to be joyful in hope. And so this morning, we're going to sing this song on the way out before John closes us in prayer. So I would invite you to stand with us as we sing about God turning our mourning into dancing.